Okay, everybody, Travis Tallstrup here, and welcome to our weekly Achievers Call for the Capstone Funding Group Co-Invest Group. Just wanted to congratulate everyone on making the event that we had this past week, our workshop Thursday and Friday, a tremendous success. I felt, as did many of you, that it was our best workshop yet, and we look forward to those recordings that will be uploaded per the email that I sent out. You'll notice that those will be available in the members area next Tuesday, November 4th. So be on the lookout for those. We've also got some very exciting news. Just fresh this morning, I sent a little screenshot there for you that had gotten wired into our account yesterday morning. They were on East Coast time. So by the time we got into the office, that was in the account and they were asking for confirmation. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit and kind of give you a rundown so you guys have a feel for, you know, what that took and how long that process was and allow you guys to ask any questions there. So also, one of the things that we wanted to start doing that we realized from the workshop, we feel like we've done a decent job of getting you guys connecting and getting to know each other better. But I think there's always, you know, if there's good and then there's excellent and then there's outstanding, you know, what we're really looking for is that outstanding level. And so we want to do as much as we can to, hold on, let's just mute. So we got some background noise there. We'll get rid of that. Just so that everyone can get to know each other. So one of the things we wanted to do was start a member spotlight, just portion of this call and, you know, take really, you know, 2 to 3, maybe 4 minutes and allow a group member each time, just so we have a feel for the skill sets and experience and background of each of you. So we'll put you all on the spot, put you in the spotlight and do that. And then it's a way for us to, you know, help us really connect our networks up with everybody else's networks. I think it's going to be very beneficial and also a way for as new group members come on board, you know, they will be able to introduce themselves and take their turn in the spotlight and help us get to know them. And as we're growing the group and we have various needs amongst group members, I think it'll be simply awesome to be able to connect where we need to connect. So one more quick little request. If you didn't have a chance to give us a video testimonial, if you attended the workshop, we would really appreciate a written testimonial. And just your thoughts or experiences at the workshop and some of your interactions. A lot of times you can just talk about a few of your big takeaways, you know, what was it worth your investment of time and why? And for that matter, anything as it relates to participating in the Co-Invest group, what are some of the things you're finding valuable? We can always utilize that to help us grow the group. And in growing the group, obviously, I think you guys are seeing the value of, you know, a larger network of people to collaborate and mastermind with. So please, it would take you, you know, anywhere from 2 to 5 minutes just to draft something up and send it over. We'd love that. And if you can send us a little pic, great. If not, we'll follow up with you to get a picture later for that. So anyway, we'd appreciate that. We also announced at the workshop, you'll see there item number 5 on the email. This is just an opportunity where we'll have some pre-written emails or flyers, et cetera, that you can just kind of insert your affiliate link, but you first have to get signed up as a referral partner if that's something you guys would like to do. If it's this is not for everybody, but there are some of you that'd be like, wow, that would be great to just, you know, have a little extra income there from doing that. And we pay out our affiliate checks, right? Soon as we collect the money. So it's happens on a 30-day basis that we do that, and it can be for the right person. So if you have any questions on that, just fill that out. We get an email, it notifies us, and we'll be in contact just getting you access to some of those things. And if you've got a little email list that you send out to or a little website you can put stuff on, or if you just talk to somebody that you think might be a good fit, you can send them over your personal link once you do that. So a couple of things, and maybe I can just unmute you guys, and we would like your feedback really quick. Maybe it's just a chance for us just to do a quick little discussion here and put in a quick vote. We've got quite good attendance today. Looks like we got almost 15 of you on here, maybe even more. But if you guys could go and just put in a vote, if we were to do future workshops, would you like to keep them on a Thursday, Friday, or do a Friday, Saturday? So maybe just I'm going to unmute and just put in some votes, and let's just see what the consensus might be amongst the group. So any thoughts, you guys?
Can you hear me, Travis? It's Alan here.
Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm fine with Thursday, Friday. So, but either or, I'm okay with. So keeping it Thursday, Friday, I'd be fine with that.
Okay.
Kelly,
sounds
too.
Really good. Kelly, you appreciate, you could go either way, no particular preference.
I like Thursday, Friday also.
Yeah, okay. Bill, I like Thursday, Friday preferably, but if it works better for the group on other days, that's fine too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's Richard, that'd be for Thursday, Friday as well.
Okay, is there anybody that wants Friday, Saturday?
That would be me, Travis. I would prefer Friday, Saturday if possible, just because of the drive.
Okay.
As well as Travis, also eager, I would prefer Friday, Saturday as well, if possible.
Okay. Very good. Anybody else feel one way or the other, feel strongly one way or the other as we do those future get-togethers?
Travis, is Marion.
Uh-huh.
Yes, we would prefer Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday. Okay.
Travis, Caleb here.
Okay, go ahead, Caleb.
I prefer Thursday and Friday.
Thursday, Friday. Okay.
Travis?
Go ahead. Who's this?
It's Kimberly. I would prefer the Friday, Saturday.
Friday, Saturday. Okay, so we're it looks like we're right down the middle. We're split right down the middle. So very good. Well, what we're looking. Go ahead.
Felicia, I prefer the Thursday, Friday.
Okay. Very good.
Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Okay. Well, let's do this, guys. What we'll do is I just wanted to kind of get a feel on the call so you guys could hear it from each other. But we can also send out just a quick little survey item too, and we'll actually ask that next time. So what we're thinking, we feel like about every 6 to 8 weeks to get together live, and it's a benefit for all of you guys to just come. It's included with your annual, you've already invested for the first year, and we just wanted to be able to have you guys and make it available where it's about every 6 to 8 weeks. So I'll put you guys on mute here, so we don't have the background noise. And we'll keep on rolling here. So very good. Well, I appreciate that. And we're looking at two different dates where we think it's going to be the 12th and 13th of December. We know that's kind of in between Thanksgiving and Christmas, but we know that you also have lots of files that you may be mailing out some seasonal offers and would like some, you know, for some potential settlement offers and stuff. So we'd like to actually continue to give those opportunities. And we have several new people that are wanting to come to workshops that, you know, those dates, the date we just had didn't work, either short notice or whatever. And so we'll be having one coming up. It'd be either the 11th or 12th or the 12th and 13th that weekend. And then we would do either the evening before or the Friday evening, we would do some, you know, mastermind sessions where you could just present some of your own files, very similar to what Darren Moon did, because a lot of you will be right in the thick of that, and you guys will be able to jump up there and put some of your specific files up there. So as always, guys, we appreciate any suggestions to take this to the next level. And so please feel free. Anything at all. Don't hold anything back. You know, we're committed to that high standard, you know, the outstanding level. So please forward any of that, and we will look to get some things implemented. We've got a team that is excited. We had a great little debrief, our weekly max ROI huddle we had yesterday, talking about what went well, what we can do better, And it's always good to have things from the group that come in, because this is your group, not just our group. It's everybody's group. So, all right. Well, what I wanted to do today, we're going to actually post this in the members area with the timeline of how things kind of all went down as an idea on this settlement. We want to spend some time on this today. And actually, before we do that, next week on Tuesday, Sabrina is not with us today. Somehow we got communication lines crossed and her flight got scheduled for right now. So she's actually in the air flying back to Ohio. And we hope that that will never happen again. And we'll make sure to the scheduling side of that doesn't happen so that she can join us every time. But also she'll be with us next week again. And then also we will have a visitor from Richmond Monroe. We were trying to get them on today and scheduling just didn't work out, but it looks like I think we're either almost there or it's confirmed for next week to have Leslie Roberts on the phone from Richmond Monroe. So that'll be great. If anyone has any time-sensitive questions or questions in general for Richmond Monroe, it'd be great if you could just reply to my email that came out today. That would be awesome. So anyway, we wanted to jump through. I'm going to, Aaron, are you on there? Maybe unmute yourself. And Monica as well, if you can unmute.
I'm here.
We'll just go through a little bit of this. We wanted to go through this particular settlement and talk about it. This was it was a key settlement. It was one of our higher ranked assets in our pool. And as you guys will notice, our original pool, we were right in that $600,000 purchase range. And I don't know how many of you looked at the screenshot that was attached, but that was $69,000. Let's just say you padded the amount of fees we had into that all the way up to about $4,000. You're looking at over 10% covering your bucket. So you guys can imagine on those investments you guys did, if you just got one decent settlement, it would actually could even be more than a 10% of your portfolio based on some of these $100,000 purchases. So Aaron, why don't you run us through? I know you took the voicemail on this particular asset, you know, that came in back in early April. Yeah. And they were trying to get a refinance done.
Yeah, let me go through the snapshot for an overview since we are recording this. And so the asset is actually in Inglewood, Florida, which is on the west coast side of Florida, just south of Sarasota. The population is pretty small, only about 15,000 people, but it is coastal. So that's as far as the asset is concerned. It's a nice little property, has some decent land, has over 4 bedrooms. So here's the borrower's story, and I'll give you a timeline as everything looks, and Monica helped prepare all this, so we appreciate that. So the borrower, we initially had contact. So we got the loans end of last year, a purchase. We finally got collateral for them in March. We got set up with skip tracing and being able to run all credit during that time as well. And so we were able to get his phone number and email and everything else. So we did reach out to him. We had an initial phone call, which was, I think, Travis, is probably our first, maybe second call that we personally did out to this particular portfolio. Anyways,
it was actually prior to even sending our initial packages out. It had come in, they had pulled title, and this guy was trying to do a refinance on his first.
So we called him, got straight through because we had a cell phone that was provided through the skip tracing data. He picked up. He was pretty defensive, but it wasn't a nasty call. It was more of a wake up call, like, oh shoot, these guys are really calling me. They got through to me and on my cell phone, and here we are. So we had probably a 7-8 minute call to go through who we are, what we're doing, and then we followed up with an email. What do you think happened after that? Went completely dark. Right. So then after that, we initiated everything else. We sent out our initial wake up package, showing, you know, with our assignment, the note, the deed of trust and all that good stuff. And a demand for payment and what he actually owed. So let me go through. And so before taking a step back, before I get into the numbers, like Travis is saying, we had an initial contact from the title rep because he was trying to refinance the first lien. And so they reached out to us and left two voice messages. And I called them back no less than, this is the title company, probably called them back 5 or 6 times and never even got through to them, but did exchange an email. And all they were looking to do was for us to subordinate and to move on. And I told them we weren't going to do that.
Let me add something in there. And so basically 4/16, April 16th was our initial contact from the title company. And then from there, we tried to reach out. We had that first phone call, and then he would not return any phone calls from Monica, who would call at least 3 times a week, right, all the way up until finally she got in touch with him, right? And just there, about May 21st, it looks like, is when our follow-up email with the payoff option and settlement offer went out, right? We actually sent an actual, there's the actual letter that went out. So anyway, just to give you guys an idea, just you got to stay persistent with them. But let's continue to keep going, Aaron. So
Monica did do that. But before we even sent that offer, and I'll go chronologically, when we initially sent out the wake up package, we did a 70% settlement offer off of the entire amount, including arrearages, everything. And so that original offer was $50,000. That was then. Now we wouldn't do that, right? We wouldn't put our best foot forward on that initial offer. We'd want to see what they would have. So that was the first settlement. Let me give you the borrower snapshot. This guy had a FICO of 677. He was paying $1,265 on the senior. His UPB on the senior was just under $120,000. When we initially did our due diligence, the fair market value was $170,000. So we did have a good $50,000 in equity just on the senior there. Now, fast forward to September, when we were in the throes of final negotiations, it went up even higher to $220,000. So we had, $100,000 we were looking at there. So you could see why he was trying to refinance, because his interest rate on the senior was very high as well. I just don't recall what that was exactly. So the junior UPB was $125,000. We paid just over $20,000 for it. And that was so that's globally the snapshot. As we got to know this borrower and know his story, Monica had a few conversations with him. We did some more due diligence online, and we found out that he's a world-class bass fisherman and also had a sales job. We later find out that his wife has a nice paying job. And so we were just kind of getting the full scope of what the borrowers, what their story was. In addition, when we asked for financials, there were some moving of money back and forth between other accounts, and we didn't have the financials from those other accounts. So as Travis was reviewing those and, with Monica and the rest of the team, we asked for additional financials so we could get, he's obviously has more money, hiding money and not looking to do. So he was a little difficult at first. He did get a little nasty here and there as far as the communication and what he was wanting to give to us. But moving past that, let me go.
Let me add one thing that I think I'd like to get for the recording for people who didn't get to attend the workshop. And that is, in this particular case, we went a certain amount of time where, he continued to give Monica excuses. And, we had certain response deadlines that he would push right up to and then not follow through. And finally, we finally just said, listen, let's actually have Damien, who's our attorney out in Florida, let's have him draft the formal complaint, but not file it. So we'll have him draft it, and then let's have him invoice us for a full foreclosure. which he does that regardless, right? He's going to invoice you for the whole thing, and you know, you pay the whole thing, and if it, you know, ends up coming back where you don't go the whole distance, you would then have a credit on account and get that refunded. But what we did was just that. I had the complaint notarized. We hadn't filed it yet because that's a pretty pricey process in Florida. So we thought, okay, Monica, send this out one last time, right? Where we send this out with a complaint that shows we're serious, along with the attorney's invoice, and that goes out. And we did that across 5 or 6 files that we had in Florida. But anyway, point being that next piece of correspondence we had was a request from his attorney's office, right? So he had actually gone and gotten legal. And some people might look at that as a negative, saying, well, you could have settled it without attorneys. And in this case, it actually sped things up. So it was very interesting that, you know, we requested the letter of representation to come over. And after that, things moved along a little more forcefully and methodically, and it worked out really well. So I just wanted, for the recording, to have you guys hear that. That's a great little strategy without going to the next level of fees, to at least try to re-engage if they've stopped talking with you, rather than just, nope, we're not talking to anyone, and just file the complaint, do all these things. Because if you're managing budget and you're managing expenses, that's a key deal. So, and then be sure to make sure you have a letter of representation, an official letter of representation on the attorney's letterhead from them, to show that they're officially representing that borrower, and they're not just a family member or friend. Because that was interesting. While we were on the phone on that initial discovery call, the attorney emailed us over, and one of the things that it was, this was a time where Sabrina had talked to us and said, no, you want it on their letterhead, and asked for that. And it was a key little distinction. I thought, do we really need that? And the truth of it was, it really makes them look official, put it on there, and it takes a little more effort, but you can tell if they're for real and really wanting to put their name out there as an official letter of representation. So it seems like a small thing, but it actually turned into be a real big thing for us, to the point where, if you guys notice where that wire came from on that attachment, you know, it was actually from the attorney's trust account. So to the point where it was all official, and there's other things we can teach about that later, but pick up back on that, Aaron.
You know, yeah, let me just give you the full amount on what was owed, and then I'll give you a paint by the numbers timeline to wrap up this workout case study. So again, the UPB on the junior, $125,000. The rate was 7.2%. The original payment was $956. The total arrearage and late fees was just under $43,000. So he was all in $167,000 into us. So let me go through the communication and offer breakdown. So again, title rep contacted us on April 16th, wanted to refi, no further communication until May 21st, where we sent a follow-up email with a payoff option and settlement offer with two options. One was a settlement offer in the amount of $65,000. So we bumped up from the initial $50,000, went out in the package. That was our best offer, and that was no longer on the table. The second option was a loan modification, where it would be $130,000 loan amount. He would put $20,000 down, and it would be $110,000 new loan with a 5% rate, interest only for 60 months, and a $500 a month payment. Okay, we said if they agreed to option two and paid the $20,000 as part of the loan mod agreement, we would subordinate to the new first mortgage as part of the current refinance that he had in motion. So April 30th, no response. We sent another email on April 30th. Last response, you know, prior, giving him one last opportunity. Hey, we're going to refer this to the attorney now. No response. June 5th, we sent in the attorney breach letter was sent out, as Travis was just outlining. And then on July 2nd, there was communication between Travis and the borrower, and he requested a full workout package and wanted all that. So Travis, why don't I turn it over to you and you close it out?
Well, just to back up there, that was just a breach letter on attorney letterhead. That wasn't the official complaint, just so you guys know. So that was on June 5th, then 7-2, got a little bit combative in the conversation, but I think it, for the most part, Monica had, he started to be very cordial with Monica because he wasn't talking to me, I guess. But anyway, that got sent out in the mail, and that's where the phase from July 2nd through August 11th, right? That's where we actually, he had stopped communicating, had different excuses, and that's when we filed, we didn't file the complaint, sorry, it was a draft of the complaint. We emailed it to him, said, hey, what's going on? That's when the attorneys got involved in the final point. And then if you guys remember from calls that we had, in recent calls, this is where he came back with 50K, and we know that his 401k statement only said 48K. So obviously he was getting money from somewhere. And if you guys remember, it was 69,940 was our offer plus attorney's fees. And we just came back and stayed firm on that, and they came up 12 grand to 62,000. And that's where we kind of had a group exercise on the call, here about a month back, just over a month back. And we actually stayed firm, decided to stay firm at 69,940, but we would, pay our attorney. It wouldn't be paid in addition to that. So we did go ahead and take those fees. And we were since advised from our attorney, just, if you're ever going to do that, just make sure that you always keep the standard of them paying the attorney's fees and just lowering your bid. You always want to do that because that's a little negotiating power plus attorney's fees and costs. So just so you guys have that. And we actually just stayed with that and let another few days go by. And they actually came back and said, we'll accept your offer. And that was an email that Monica sent me back when we were getting ready to speak at Noteworthy. And that was an awesome, awesome email. But it asked for an extension till the 27th. And that was actually yesterday. And so they did exactly what they said they would after that we had sent out the settlement agreement to get signed. So, that's kind of a play-by-play, and we really wanted to give that to you guys. Yeah. But what I wanted to do is, any other comments on that, Monica?
Well, Travis, will you tell everybody why exactly we kind of used some oddball numbers? So, the offer was $69,940.74. So I don't know if we've really talked about that, and maybe you can kind of talk about, why we do that.
Well, for any other reason that it's not an exact number, I'd never use an exact number. I mean, you guys will laugh, but we're pulling numbers out of a hat just where it feels like it's been calculated some other way. But for you guys, what's that?
They would never be able to figure out where that number came from, right? That's the thinking of partly why we do that as well. Like, how did they come up with that number? Like, they would never be able to back into that.
So before I open it up for Q&A, I just want to tell you guys just a few mistakes that you can definitely avoid in a negotiation like this. But one of the mistakes, obviously, is to, come in, start with a higher number. And for us, we've since looked at it on especially on properties with that, on a property that you're looking to have carry, I call it an anchor. I haven't heard this from anyone else, but it obviously makes sense. I don't want to claim total credit for this, but one of your anchor loans, right? That's going to really carry a big portion of the return for your overall blended return in a blended pool, right? So that's something where this was a big one. And so you actually need this loan to produce more. And Aaron mentioned something about on this particular property that, the Zillow value was at 220, right? And he owed 117 on his first, and it had gone up from when we had bought it. Well, he was providing backup that, it wasn't worth more than 170 all along, right? And then it kind of bumped up, and he's like, well, maybe it's gone up to 180. So he was constantly placing his numbers on that. So that was a mistake that we did, and we probably should have gone ahead and initiated that. You know, for me, it was down to, did we want to invest another $800-$900 just preparing the complaint? Because that's what the attorney charged. And if I was to go back on this, I absolutely, when he missed deadlines, I would have done that sooner. And so that's something you guys can be thinking about. If you want to continue to get them to call, if they're just not calling you back, I got better things to do after 30 days if they're not calling me back. So another mistake would be we were just soft in the approach and hoping that something went about it when this was an asset that we already knew he had to perform, that we would have taken over, we would have foreclosed on. So why wait? You know, time was money as far as we were concerned. So go ahead and star to unmute yourself if you guys have some questions on this, because I really want to go through this, you know, one last time, and eventually we'll have this on slides and put this, you know, just to a little webinar presentation that we'll record as well, just to show you the whole play-by-play. But we wanted to give you a snapshot of that and just allow you guys to ask some questions, because this is what you're looking for here in the next 30 to 60 to 90 days. You're wanting to pop a one or two of these on the loans that you guys have purchased. So any questions, star to unmute yourself. Anybody? Huh? Star to unmute. So we covered it that well. There's Gary. Thank you, Gary. Go ahead. Gary, you got a question? Gary does not have a question.
Travis, someone just can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, it's Darren Moon. I just had a question. I like your strategy with the putting in a complaint and recording it, but actually not having the attorney file it. How does that work?
Okay, so first of all, we didn't record it. So we notarized it, right? Oh, so notarized. It was notarized, and it was the actual complaint that would have been filed, right? That's when you have to pay the filing fee, which would then be, you know, where you'd have that whole thing. So the filing fee, if you know, you can see, for those of you who have Florida loans or you're interested in seeing how they price out foreclosures in Florida, we can provide that for you. But it's actually done based on a percentage, or, you know, of the loan amount. So it was this large number, because this was a bigger second mortgage. So it's actually a percentage. So all we really did is we had the attorney draft the complaint. So here's the official complaint, very legal looking. And then we went and notarized it. Right. And the next step would have been, if we didn't want to like use that as leverage, we would have literally just would have turned that around, FedExed it and sent it back to the attorney to actually go file. Does that make sense? So he would have actually filed that at the, you know, county recorder's office, or, you know, clerk's office, court, whatever, file it with the court, because there's a judicial state. Sorry. So
yeah, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense. Okay. So, and the attorney doesn't mind doing that, or do they charge you a small fee, or they just say, okay, that's fine.
No, they actually charged. So I think it was, if we look at it, I think Monica, I can have her prep that, but it was somewhere in the neighborhood of $800, you know, between their fee. I can get a breakdown on that, but it was actually his fee to go draft the complaint. Right. And then, you know, your notary fee, I think that was all in, maybe that number that we had was what we were all in on that particular file. So it might've just been 1 hour of his time, you know, plus our notary, plus our, you know, so anyway, but I'll get a breakdown on that number for you guys, just so you know. But that was a decision where if you were to have suspended it there, right, versus sending him the, because once he goes to file it, there's additional actual court costs plus his office and the labor cost, right, to go do that. So we actually caught it before that. And then we actually attached it in an email, that complaint that was notarized, and we actually attached that. Oh, here's Monica. Thank you, Monica. I love Google Chat while you're on a call. So the demand letter was $150. Title search. Okay, that's where the $375 came in. So the title search that they always do as part of the foreclosure was $375, and the attorney slash admin fees were $812.50. So what are we looking at there? Almost $1,300, right?
Okay, so that's something that you guys actually paid, and that was the decision, but you didn't go through actually filing the foreclosure.
Yeah, we didn't actually even file the complaint. which would, you know, because it's a little longer of a process. And there's a bunch more after you even file the complaint that goes on in the state of Florida. But that's what we were able to do. And we actually just did that with several complaints that he had prepared for us. And then we were actually used that just to go back. It was just emails back to, you know, in this case, it was just to the borrower and his wife. And then the next correspondence we got back was from the borrower saying, on Monday, this was like, I think on a Thursday, but on Monday, I'd like to do a call, a settlement call, and I'd like to have my attorney on the phone. And so we're like, yes, you know, let's get this show on the road. So that's where it happened. So great question. And hopefully that clarifies that we didn't actually record it and we didn't end up having to. We ended up settling it prior to that, which probably just on in Florida on the back end of that, just so you guys know, $1,300. The invoice for that particular borrower was around, $4,900 for that full foreclosure in the state of Florida. So obviously we won't be paying the other $3,600 or whatever it is. So we've already sent payment, but we'll actually have a credit that will be able to be applied to three or four other files we have going in Florida. So great question.
But the borrower sees that $4,900 expense, right, when you emailed it to him?
Exactly. He saw the whole invoice. And in the email text, we were saying, listen, you know, we're getting ready to send this, these two documents off, you know, with a check for the full payment for the foreclosure. Right. And, you know, obviously we're fronting that money for that. But this, if we do end up settling this, if you really want to stay in this property, right, this is an expense that's unnecessary. Right. You know, we've only advanced. And I don't think we told him how much we had advanced. Right. We just said, you know, this would be an expense that we would pass on to you in the event that we're able to work something out and you want to stay. And that's where he re-engaged again. So, and that's actually happened three times now where they re-engaged with that simple little strategy when they had gone dark. So I think it's a valuable little thing that we're actually implementing as a literally a step in our process. So I don't know how excited, you know, Damien is about that. But it is what it is, right? We're saving money. So,
yeah, Travis? Smart.
Yeah, go ahead. Who's this?
Richard.
Okay, go
ahead. So, did it cost anything, any extra? Like, for instance, if you just go to directly to the foreclosure versus doing it, like, do it through this step and then foreclosure?
Actually, it didn't, because it was actually kind of right as one of the steps in the flow, Richard. So we actually went through this process, and it was something that we bounced it off Damien and said, you know, what happens if we settle it at this point of the process? He says, well, any work that I'd had, we'd close out the file, right? You could, you know, do a final bill and close it out. So it was within the process, and we just kind of grabbed it out of that middle process instead of, and I actually just sat there thinking there's got to be a way to not have to pay the whole $4,900 if we can get this guy re-engaged. So that was just something that we did. I had, you know, to be 100% honest with you, I had not heard of that, and I wanted to try that just to say, let's try it. And it was something that when we actually talked to Sabrina about that, she thought it was a great idea. So we were actually going to implement that as part of our system on all Florida loans. So it actually makes me want to...
Yeah, especially Florida. Florida is really expensive, so I'll probably do that with Damien as well.
Yeah, I actually thought it was great. And, you know, it's kind of a stair-step process, and it ended up working out really well, so we like it. So great question. Other questions, guys? Star to unmute.
Yeah, I have a question.
Go ahead, William.
Okay, just so I understand it correctly, did the attorney prepare the document and send it to you, and you went down and notarized it and then emailed it to the borrower?
Yeah, it's exactly right. Yeah, the only I didn't go down and notarize it because my assistant Charlotte is a notary, so we did have a mobile notary come in because that was before Charlotte had come on board. So I didn't go down, I just had someone come in. I always try to group together all my notaries and have someone show up at my office for a single fee because my time's valuable, and I hope you guys all treat your time the same way. So that's exactly what we did, William.
Okay. So, okay, that's great. Wow, what a big savings on costs. And Florida is a tough one, and I've got a couple of, or I've got one in Florida, I know. So that's great. And Damien, the attorney, his contact information, is it on the members area, or do we need to get that from you directly?
I'm 99.9% sure it is. And we also have an additional cheat sheet. So someone that's listening in from our staff, make sure that if that hasn't been posted, by Sabrina offered that to the group. She has a cheat sheet of some attorney referrals. So that's a big deal. So we'll make sure and get that up. But Damien's contact information should be under the resources tab. And you guys will actually see here over the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're looking to make that members area flow very smoothly. So you'll see a few changes, and we'd obviously love your feedback on it as we go about doing that. So very good. So star, thank you. You're welcome, William. Star, if you've got a question.
Travis, hi, Igor speaking. I actually heard about this type of strategy, but from what I heard, people were just sending out letters of demand on a attorney's letterhead, and that was sufficient. What is there any reason that you actually needed to go to do a full kind of pre-foreclosure package? I understand that the invoicing is definitely one of the cards in the game here, but have you tried in any of your strategies just sending letter of demand on a attorney's letterhead?
Okay, so just so you know, this was after we had done all that, Igor. So this was something where the invoice and the actual complaint that were prepared, we had already done our internal breach letter early right. on in the process. And then mm-hmm. we actually had the attorney, we had Damien do a letter on his, a demand letter on his letterhead. And that was
that didn't 100. Work as well.
That did not work as well. It actually got him to call us, right? It got him to call us, and he and I exchanged some pleasantries, you know, back and forth on that. And he was convinced that I was going to give him, you know, I said, I'll pay you $5,000 more than you bought it for. And I says, well, I appreciate the offer. And I'll respectfully decline. Hopefully Monica doesn't chime in and say that other words were used with that guy. But anyway, the words were a little different that day. But yeah, so you could, I don't make a practice of, I don't know if what you were saying is to use, unless you have an attorney friend that would let you do that, I wouldn't, I mean, you're saying to actually have the attorney's office do it, right, Igor?
Right, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah, because that would be the step after your internal breach letter. Then you would mm-hmm. do the attorney breach letters after that. It's more official. It's from their office, and you go from there. So yeah, that was, we had done all of those steps already in the process.
I understood.
Great question. Other questions?
Star. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, so the way I understand it, you sent an internal breach letter, then you had Damien send a demand letter on his letterhead. That didn't work, but it got a phone call. And then after that, communication broke down, and then you had to file this next thing, which was the complaint. Well, yeah, getting ready to file the complaint. You didn't actually file it, but you prepared it and notarized it.
Yep, exactly. That's correct. The exact chronology there. And just so you guys know, on this particular deal, we know from traditional real estate negotiation, the first one to name numbers loses, right? And yet mm-hmm. Travis, in full transparency, Travis was like, hey, here's a loan mod. Here's a settlement offer. Here's a loan mod. You know, go ahead and take this. We gave him two options, right? And so he kind of knew where we were. And, you know, that's just wanting to kind of, you know, get the music going, right? And, you know, looking back on that, he hadn't done anything, you know, to work on a relationship, you know. So really acting like a bank, right, is something that we've instituted, and it's been very helpful, you know, with both Monica and Kristen, you know, coming in. And you know, there's just things where, you know, it's like, hey, let's make them do certain things. And they didn't even submit their financials until we actually were dealing with the attorney, right? And so here I had gone and given out numbers without them having submitted financials. So I strongly suggest not doing that in the future. So hopefully you guys can learn through my mistake there. Very good. Other questions? Okay, any other questions in general about other items? I'm seeing a few faces.
I have a comment or a question.
Go ahead.
This is William. Okay, so I talked to Monica today, and she was going to try to find out. Sabrina last week had mentioned getting a P.O. box. I have a mailbox place, but I have my name tied to it as my broker. And I was wondering if anybody knew, or maybe we had heard back from Sabrina, whether we should set up a separate P.O. box for our LLC or not. Anybody have any thought or input on that?
Yeah, William, you should actually just go talk to the mailbox company themselves and tell them that you're going to start receiving mail addressed in this company name and info. Like we've done that before. So like whether you're using a P.O. box or USPS, or whether you're using a box through UPS, because UPS has boxes as well, which I've used for years, Travis as well, and you just give them the information rather than create a separate box. That's one suggestion.
Yeah, that'll save you a little bit of money from having to start a separate box. And there's, you know, just a personal preference, I think, William, on that. But I would strongly suggest not having your home address. You know, I wouldn't suggest that. So.
No, definitely not home address. But I was just thinking, because I'm a broker licensed in California, they're going to Google me, and they're going to Google that address, and my name's just going to pop up automatically. I Google it several different ways. Just the address brings up my name. So just
okay. Very good.
Hey, Travis.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, do you guys have any type of checklist or, you know, some type of best practices in order to set those details when you first get started? Like do's and don'ts type of thing, and where to get started?
Well, go ahead, Aaron.
Well, I was just trying to, in reference to what specifically, is it getting your business presence out there? Is that what you're referring to?
Correct.
Yeah, you know, Travis, we've talked about it. We talked about actually just doing a training with you guys on that and kind of going through stuff on there. But Travis, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say a lot of people have some stuff, you know, started up for a previous real estate business, you know, and it's like, so there's similar things, but there's a little bit of difference too. And that's where a lot of people at the workshop were mentioning, hey, my presence, my website, my, you know, all of that. And those are things that we definitely can put together on things that we've done, right? That's not something we had in like a step-by-step-by-step to do that. And that's something that I think definitely needs to happen. And we've got pieces of that. So but we can go ahead and put that together. Great.
I guess I can give you a 60-second overview for you, you know, fast implementers, do-it-yourselfers, you know, rather than waiting for us to get back there, if you want to try and get some together. I you know, go to GoDaddy.com and buy a domain name of what business you're going to be operating out. Even though you don't have a website set up or anything, at least you have that domain. And then go set up a Google Apps business account and have that email go to that account you just set up with Google. And so there, at least you have a, you know, what an email address that's not a private Gmail or Yahoo address. It's an actual business address. And then go ahead and get you, you know, a phone number through Call8, like KALL8.com or something. So you have a phone number that could be then forwarded to your cell phone, and you have a domain name. We can go into more detail and put the rest of the pieces together, but that should be a good start, so you have, you know, something better than nothing.
Well, and just to add to that, one of the things that, you hear about on the 800 number and Minnie Miranda having the recording on there. You know, we'll put in here email signature, right? Those are things, because those are some of your basics just in terms of presence, and you haven't even gotten to a formal website yet, right? Those are just some of the basics in corresponding back and forth via email, etc. So we'll definitely outline that and have that available for you guys.
Hey, Travis.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know you guys operate under a few different entity names. Are there any issues with, like, communicating with, let's say, for instance, a customer that actually you own under Max ROI, and then you send them an email to Capstone Funding Group?
Well, here's the beautiful thing about Google Apps for Work that you can have. So, and this is not to get off on this whole call, but this is a key piece of information. You actually can have every single time you send an email, unless you just want to separate out the email inboxes in general, you can actually have a who it's sent from. You can change that every time and have different signatures with that. You can have multiple aliases coming in and different, you know what I mean? You can control that all from a single inbox if you want, or it's pretty easy just to segment those inboxes and do that.
Okay, I didn't know you can do that with Google Apps. Okay, I'll take a look at it. Thanks.
Very good. Other questions? Welcome to Mr. John Moss. I notice he's on there. And Ken Schoenskavich. So you guys join us. Welcome. Gary, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
A couple things I might add is, and a question. One is, when I use Google Gmail, there's a little app that you can use called Streak. Excuse me. Let me take a sip of water. It's called Streak, and then it's an extension on Google and Gmail. And when I use it, when I send email out to anybody, it pings you back whenever they look at it or read the email. So you could tell when they read the email.
Oh, that's awesome. So Streak, Streak.
Right.
Okay, so if some of you guys are using the Google app, some of you aren't. But that would be just where they have a little marketplace that as you manage your domain, I'm seeing that we probably just ought to have a little training on this because it's something I do second nature. I was one of the first 250,000 businesses on Google Apps for Business. They now call it Google Apps for Work, and I think there's like 9 million businesses on it now. So, and it's now, they charge $5 per user per month, but it is worth every cent.
I think what we'll do, Travis, is we should just do a little webinar. And we'll record it and have everybody, you know, that can go and watch it and go through and see everything.
Well, just for the, yeah, we'll definitely do that. But while you guys are waiting, like Aaron was saying, that for you instant implementers, if you just go to YouTube and type in Google Apps for Work, and they have three or four videos that the minute you watch them, because they do a very good job on their little sizzle reels, their little videos that, you know, their marketing videos. And you'll want it like immediately. I mean, it's that you'll look at it and say, wow. And so everything we do at our office is all based on just collaboration, you know, real time. There's no attachments floating around. It's mostly just all Google Docs that are uploaded and shared. So just take a chance and do that. We'll create some links as well. It's a system that you can do. And like Gary said, it's an open source where they, all sorts of programmers are doing cool add-ons in the marketplace that you can just add and utilize. So it's very, I mean, think of that, to know exactly when someone opens up the email you sent or not and what they read, and they got similar things that we've used for video, right? You can watch what point they stopped watching in a video. That's more on the marketing side. But so anyway, very cool.
Let me add one other comment, Travis, on that so they can close the gap for instant implementers, because we have talked about, you know, your letterhead, you know, your business. So you probably need a logo. So either have somebody in the family do it, or some, you know, maybe a youth member that is good on graphic design and can do you a little logo, or you can always go to 99designs.com and do that. They're pros. They'll do it, you know, with just giving them a little direction, give you several to choose from. So that's 99 designs.com, and y'all can do that. And that should at least give you a good start.
And the other one, just to add, while Aaron's adding that on the logo, you might also, let me just make sure it pulls up under this, because it's that, make sure I got the site right, but it's swiftly.com. Let me just see if that's it. Swiftly. Yeah, that's actually where a lot of the 99 designs, this will be for you economizers, right? You know, check that out. Swiftly, swiftly.com. And if you need it done now, like if you just want it to be done and be over with, 99 designs, they'll launch a full contest and you'll have several people designing a logo that you can pick from. But here, if it's little smaller design stuff, and it might either or, you might use one or the other for things. So those are two good resources for you guys that we utilize extensively. And then we've also got Ben who helps us out in office, obviously. So very good comments, guys. These are all key things as you look to have that professional image and, you know, as a lender, and then grow your business and scale it. So I appreciate Sam, you know, putting that on there, getting the checklist going, because that's something we just have done, and it'll be beneficial for everyone to have that as we move forward. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, on a future call, maybe we can have like an attorney and talk about like how to set up, or what kind of entity would be most beneficial for us.
That sounds great. I'll make a note. We actually have, and maybe we can get him to come on sooner, between Matt Sorensen, who's speaking at the summit, and his business partner, Mark Kohler. I know some of you guys have heard him speak. I know you've heard him speak before, Richard, but appreciate you putting the bug in my ear, because he's definitely very interested in working with our group and just being part of the Note Investor Summit in February. So I'll put that, you know, which entity's best. Okay, anything else? I'm going to...
I just have one question for Gary.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, hold on. Start one more time. Go ahead and start one more time, William. I'll unmute you and Gary. Sorry, I had to mute everybody.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay, on streak.com... is that a separate website from Google, or is that part of Google, inside Google's apps?
Sure, let's unmute Gary. You there, Gary? You there, Gary? Sorry, I was trying to unmute him.
It's not actually, English speaking. Streak is not .com. It's a add-on for Gmail. So basically, you just, if you do Streak Gmail, Google Streak space Gmail, you find it and you add it as an add-on to your Gmail account.
Yeah. So go ahead, Gary. Thank you, Igor.
Yeah, you can go up to the gear up in their upper right hand corner when you're in Gmail and settings, and then go to extensions, and in the search box under extensions, type in Streak, and you know, you should be able to pop it up.
Very good, you guys. That's great. Thank you, both Igor and Gary, for helping out with that. Go ahead.
Okay. Just for some clarity, just so I understand the terminology, and I don't know if there's a list of special terms that you guys have that's a handout, but when you say internal breach letter and external breach letter, the internal breach letter, is that part of what like Gordon calls his shock and awe package, that there's a letter in there perhaps that says this is how much you owe, and that comes in from you yourself?
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly what it is. And then we also send it an additional time separately. After that initial package, we send it out an additional touch, and then 7 to 10 days after that, now we're doing some sort of a settlement offer at 10% settlement, you know, a discount, but that's on the whole amount, not on a principal reduction. That's just something we've implemented, you know. Okay. And then you've obviously got different seasonal things you can do, but yes, to answer your question, that is the internal breach letter, is, you know, the demand letter. You know, you got a demand letter that you're putting, you're demanding payment and asking for that whole amount.
Okay, and then as far as calculating arrears, Is that something now? We have ours serviced with Allied, and I should be getting information from like the images of the notes. And I mean, are they calculating their arrearages for me, or do I need to get images on the notes so I can calculate it for myself?
Well, here's what we had. I believe it was either last week or, you know, it's all kind of running together now, but maybe it was at the workshop. But it was one of those things where you actually, Sabrina told the story, and she's not here to maybe bring this up again next week, Gary, but she talked about how one of her clients had sent out something and hadn't checked the numbers that Trustee Corp sent out, that, you know, they basically, when they moved over numbers that you provide for them on a data tape for the foreclosure, right? I mean, those are the numbers that got printed out. And if you hadn't checked those numbers, right? I mean, payoffs can get paid and settled based on those numbers. So it is good to check and double check, right? And I know it doesn't look like Ken or Rosette are on today, actually, but Ken's put together a really cool little sheet that we'll be sharing out with the group to just help with some of that, the arrearage calculations.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be, we found out that his superpower, for those of you, we went through an awesome little superpowers exercise, that one of his superpowers is numbers and number crunching. So that's awesome. I know we've got some other smart people in the group too, but so he's got that and we'll provide that. But that's one helpful way to be able to do that, because that's something you do want to be able to do internally and or understand and double check what your servicer is doing, and then ultimately what your attorney does, you know, because they actually at the end of the day they'll do it themselves, but they'll also have an attorney do it once they do it, right? So I know Allied's got, they mentioned that some of their demand letters they can get out the door for $75. Well, we paid Damien in Florida $150. Well, I just know that the letter got out in a timely manner, right? But at the same time, every little dollar counts if you can save it, as long as it does ultimately get sent. So I do know loans we boarded with FCI, they calculate that for us, but they want you to pull all the data, you know, the data points when you submit the loan. So either way, you're having to do that. For those of you who met John Barrett at this summit, he's a guy that's working with us. And these are some things. He does a lot of work extensively with virtual assistants. And so we're going to see if some of those, we can train a group of those people to, you know, basically for a whole tape and the collateral files, get those things put on to a form that we can then just go double check, you know, against the notes themselves. So sorry to give you a long answer to a short question.
No problem. And then one last question on your negotiation on the example that you had earlier, and you sent a draft of the complaint to the borrower, and that is in a mortgage state, a judicial state. What's the equivalent process for the deed of trust state?
So can you say that one more time? You cut out there just a little bit.
All right. So you sent out a draft complaint that you would normally file as the first step for foreclosure in a mortgage state, right? So what's the equivalent for a deed of trust state?
You know what? That is something I bounced off Matt Kelly at our workshop. And, you know, from what he was saying, it's just you're kind of heading all the way to that direction of your notice of default, right? You're going in with that notice of default. So it's really, that's where you're at in the phase. So whatever those costs were, you know, so, I mean, I went through the strategy with him, and he got what we were doing, and he seemed to say, well, we stop at that. We're waiting at that point anyway for further direction from us as the lender. You with me? So once you do those certain things, you know, they're waiting for you anyway. So
yeah.
If that makes sense.
So there is no draft of a complaint. You're just filing the deed of trust and using that as your stick. I mean,
yeah,
sorry, not
trust, but your notice of default. Yep, the notice of default. And obviously in California, we know that, you know, they post it and do the whole nine yards. And we thought we'd get a little more uptake on our notice of defaults. We had, I think, six Californias that we went ahead that weren't communicating and nothing. So we just had to go the next round on the notice of trustee sale, and we'll see. We'll see where stuff comes, right, on some of these other ones. We did have one that got in touch with us. But so anyway, very good. Other questions, anybody, before we call it a day? Anything that they need to get answered before we conclude for today's call and come back next Tuesday? So again, next Tuesday, just to reiterate, we will have as our guest Leslie from Richmond Monroe. And so if you have questions for Richmond Monroe, please submit those to us. And we'll have Sabrina back. For those of you who did not attend the workshop, you saw Darren take full advantage of, you know, he got four of his deals up there for the hotline. It was, you know, somewhat of a live hotline. But we really want you guys, it'll force you guys to get organized as you submit them. But Sabrina actually has, so it's Sabrina@capstonefundinggroup.com, and then just copy Aaron and myself, Sabrina@capstonefundinggroup.com, and just submit those emails so we can get those in on the hotline of anything that you've got to work on. If it's related to the workout or the asset management side of it, just let us know and we'll get that in for you. So, all right, guys. Great call today and appreciate everyone's feedback. And if you have, I appreciate Richard talking about some ideas for future calls. We have several guest experts lined up. But if there's something that you guys want to see at a certain time where you'd like to see it, just let us know and we'll get that implemented. So have an outstanding week and we'll be back in touch with you guys next Tuesday. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Thank you.